Hello and welcome back to the Financial Markets Insights podcast in conversation with, I'm continuing our conversation with Stefan Malray. Picking up from our previous conversation, Stefan.
I was going to touch on two things. One is we've done a lot of work at the Realization Group on the convergence of DeFi and TradFi, and that is much to more to your point about the digital technologies, how they might support the innovation in a traditional marketplace, you know, the role of blockchain, the role of tokenization. Less so actually on the crypto front, because as you pointed out, that's now an asset class in its own right. But are you seeing, is it your experience from any of the hats that you wear, that there is a take up? We hear a lot of noise about it, but I'm always interested to see the reality of blockchain innovation, how many, you know, traditional markets are embracing it as a potential alternative.
Definitely. So, yeah, I've been looking at this for almost 10 years now, and I cannot still after 10 years consider myself an expert in the blockchain world, but I was heavily involved. I'm also on Global Digital Finance, GDF. I'm a part of the advisory board there. And I think the biggest challenge in the TradFi world was we did a very bad PR. We should have get your help 10 years ago, because 10 years ago, the talks within banks were, listen, blockchain technology is going to be a revolution for your back office operation, and it's going to cut your cost by 10, and it's going to change this and that. And the pushback we had was, well, what is the ROI? How long is it going to take? And every year they were coming back to say, well, see, it's not picking up. Like, what are you talking about? You sold a dream which doesn't realize itself. And for me, the best analogy there is moving from the checkbook to the debit card. It's not because we invented the debit card that suddenly people stop the checkbook and, you know, some banks still process checks. My mother still pay mainly by checks and not by debit card. So the two technology work in parallel, but one grew rapidly and the other one is fading slowly. And for blockchain technology, I think, unfortunately, it's going to be the same. It's banks, large banks, international banks cannot replace their existing system overnight with blockchain technology, right? So it's going to be a process of change which is going to take 10, 20 years, I don't know, but it's going to be a change. The way you trade, the way you settle trades, you know, those are so complex into the connectivity role between your risk management system, your audit system, your compliance solution, your booking system, etc., that you cannot change it overnight. While tokenization of existing assets start to emerge now. I think there's change of regulation in Europe and with MiCA, and there is also in the UK change happening and strong push from the UK to issue a digital gilt. And it was in the Prime Minister Manchin's speech. So hopefully it will happen. But we see that the noise for tokenization of existing assets in Europe and the UK, it's becoming bigger, and there's a lot of experiments and pilots. So the technology is proven, it can be done, etc. What I think we miss there is to be able to get the full benefit of tokenization of assets, you need all the layer. You need to be able to issue the bond in a tokenized format. You need to be able to process it to do the settlement and to do the payment in a tokenized way. So we don't have digital payment rail. You know, central bank digital currency will be good for that, but they don't exist in Europe yet. So we need all those layers to happen. So a lot of the focus for the month is on the primary market. And I think there is more traction, that there were a lot more than there was 2 years ago. So this is great news, but we need to continue to push that on the secondary market and then on the settlement side with the payment layer. And then the other things with pushing back now to have digital assets as a heart of discussion is that you like it or not, but the new administration in the US is a lot more pro-crypto than the old one, right? So the regulator in the US in the past were really against regulating the crypto markets. I think the new administration is going to be more open on that. And it's a huge boost. The American banks could not touch the crypto world in the last 4 years. Now they're reopening those teams, hiring people to be able to enter that market. So that's why those two worlds of tokenization of assets and crypto native technology will start to emerge. The other things who helped a lot in the last year was the crypto ETF, right? So people can, this is a merge between those two worlds where you can buy ETF on your exposure on Bitcoin, for example. And that way you stay with the old rails, but you still get exposure of the new rail. In Switzerland, you also have with SDX also dual listings, so they can issue bonds or asset in a tokenized form, but you can still trade it on the listed market the old way. So this is also another way to help the growth of that industry. So I still believe it's going to grow. I still believe it's the right thing to do. But to recap, I think we are mistaking ourselves 10 years ago to say that it was going to be a revolution. It's going to be a slow evolution, but it's going to happen. And over time, we'll get the full benefit in costs that were promised 10 years ago.
Fundamentally, innovation, you know, we've seen this in the traditional markets, you know, that will change the way we do things. You've given the example of debit cards and checkbooks. I mean, we laugh now when we see a checkbook. We find them in the drawers. Like, can you imagine that this is what we did? The other thing we can't avoid touching on, and you mentioned it briefly in your intro, is AI. You can't look at any headline, any magazine, any industry output at all now without it covering the big AI debate. So I will say, strictly transparently, and you know what I've done for years, I love AI. ChatGPT is without doubt my friend. But to me, there's a self-evident thing that if you don't understand what AI is telling you, then it's going to be no help to you at all. Unless you give it good information and understand what it's telling you back, whether it's on my level or whether it's in very high convoluted, you know, data analytics. It's not the cure-all, is it? It's a brilliant support to your human life. But I can't say that I believe it's going to be, you know, we're all going to be suddenly handing over to AI and saying, you know, have at it, AI, do all our work for us.
So maybe I will do the same mistake I did 10 years ago. So stop me if you think so. But I think the big difference for me between AI and digital asset is what I said, digital asset will take time to implement. AI will not. People are embarking it now. And if you don't jump on that boat, you will miss the boat. If you don't start to learn how, and you see some jobs posting on LinkedIn, now people hire prompters, people who knows how to create prompt. It's a job who didn't exist 2 years ago. And now people are being paid to do that. And I think the financial industry is a bit late compared to others because of the data aspect, right? So for AI to be, it's what you said, and for AI to be performant and useful, you need to have a very strong set of information you can feed to it. So data information, structured or unstructured data. That's a big change with AI now, that it can also be unstructured data, but you need to have very good data strategy that banks in general, now that I'm outside of bank, I say, well, it's pretty crap what they have in their data strategy. So we need to get the technology layers and we need to get the data layers and then you need to have the AI layer. But if you wait too long, and we see it already with the active hedge fund or high frequency trading firm, they use AI a lot. You know, it's public information, it was the AFT, but if you look at the profit of Jane Street versus Goldman Sachs, they make almost as much money in terms of profits, but with, you know, what, 10 or 100 times less employee, because they use AI to the maximum to automate their algorithmic trading. So large entity has to embark on that. And I looked at that probably in the last 9 months, tried to go to different working groups and dinners and meet with regulator on this topic, and really believe that something big will come out of it. You have to engage with it. Yet it's kind of scary because it's difficult, it's new, you have to learn. There's this fear that AI will replace you, but I don't think there was a good quote. I was in a breakfast meeting on AI last week who say, it's not AI who is going to replace you, it's somebody using AI who is going to replace you. And I think that's very real. Last week, I was in the US in a university campus and talking to some students, and it's amazing how they already use AI left and right to study, right? Because for them, it's a natural way to look for information. We are the generation where probably we are going to do a Google search, but they just use ChatGPT over Google now because this is the best way to search for content and to ask questions and to deep dive into those questions.
That's the key, is that you can, we do it. I'm not an expert, but you know, I tell AI off and say, no, that's rubbish. Now write it. Give me, I want it more. Give me more information about this. Yeah, no, you misunderstood what I said. And you do find yourself having a conversation with AI and having that interaction, which I think, again, people miss. And the idea that students are literally pressing in, write my homework.
Exactly. It's a tool to help you improve if you use it correctly. I had a good example from one of the CEO of an FX trading venue who said he was in conversation by email with a client in France and he was using Microsoft tool to translate his emails in French. And so all the interaction by email with a French client was in French. And one day he meets this French client in a conference and the guy said, oh, bonjour, ça va, blah, blah. And the guy was, I'm sorry, I don't speak French. He said, "Oh, but like your emails, everything was in French. You make jokes with me in French." And that was it. He used AI to help him to improve the relationship he had with the clients. And that's why AI is going to be used at different level within organizations. So some tools are like you do MS Team meeting or video meeting with some of your clients. You can get the transcript now. You can get the notes, the action point, everything. So this is the first stage. You just use the tool available to help you get the action, the calendar, and the next meeting draft to translate your email, all that stuff. So this is the easy one, I think. The second layer, more difficult, is going to be, you know, how do I use my own data set with my organization to develop AI product for my staff or for my clients? And this require hiring people and be able to develop an AI strategy. And then saying, you know, if people don't have a data strategy, the AI strategy, it's even more of a mess. But they have to come up with it. I think it's going to be important. And the third layer is, you know, if you don't develop, is to partner with AI native company or people who are more involved in the AI space. And how can you work with them to integrate the solutions that you want to build?
Justin says we've got a couple of clients in the managed services infrastructural space and are developing very clever stuff because A, they generate a lot of data, and B, they can use that data actually to do that sort of customer experience insights. You can be very specific. You can monitor traffic, actually trading traffic. You don't even need the underlying trending data. You can just manage the noise, and that creates its own insights potentially to audiences. Interestingly, this is perhaps full circle. A lot of what they do is in the voice trader space. And obviously, those of us who've been around in the space, there is this presumption that it's all electronified, and it still isn't, particularly actually in FX and fixed income. Yes, there's lots of really good platforms out there and lots of innovation in electronification of fixed income. But actually, in certain instruments, it's still predominantly voice.
Yes, I will give you two examples because it's possible today. So one is in a bank I work with, where now you can analyze the chat in real time that you have with your clients, and the chat can detect these clients want to buy this instrument. You can, so unstructured to structured data, you can call your pricing engine, come back with a price and give it back to the client. So this is some use case already used to some extent. So the one I saw was in the fixed income space, but in the FX space, there was one bank who I will not name them as well, it's not public, but that I learned what is, it's a pilot. I don't know if it's going live yet, but they put in the headset of their salespeople, the client is on one side and the chatbot is in on the other side. So the client is telling them, you know, how was your weekend? You know, what you think the euro dollar will go into the next week, and due to the current turmoil, the chatbot will listen to that, go to the research that they have and say, well, head of research is thinking that, and he will tell in the head of the salesperson what you have to say to the clients, you know, so it's helping to improve right away to give them automatic real-time feedback using AI model to improve the service he gives to their clients, and it's transparent in the way it works.
So that's interesting. So salespeople, to your point, you said are going to have different skill sets now. They're now like TV presenters.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like so you have a journalist in the TV room will have the same thing, except the machine was going to give you the information now.
So that's quite interesting. I mean, I think, I can't remember if it was Soc Gen or UBS, we had an ACI event. I'm absolutely certain you were there. I want to say it was 10, 15 years ago. I think I wrote the headline. It was like the robots are coming. The rise of the machine. And then it was quite lighthearted about, oh, yeah, you know, it's going to come. But I don't think anybody anticipated the pace of change to where we are currently. But it's a natural evolution, I guess. One of the other things that keeps coming up and in terms of headlines is quantum computing, which is the next big existential threat, right? Q-Day, when quantum computing takes over the world. And again, there's a reality check here. I mean, presumably, like AI, these things have their place. No one's saying tomorrow.
Yes, yeah. So there is a reality that it's going to take time because it's extremely expensive to run for the moment. So the cost of quantum calculation needs to go down. But I think JP Morgan put a paper last week or 2 weeks ago on quantum computing and how it's going to be involved in finance at JP. And I think that the good thing is most of the banks I talked to, from global banks to large regional banks, they will have at least one person or a small team looking at that topic because the risk is too big, right? So in the banking industry, you want your bank account to be secure, right? The day you have malicious people using quantum computing to decrypt the password and anything, and it will happen, the bank have to be ready to react, right? So all the banking industry is preparing themselves to say, okay, and to some extent, it's a good parallel to where we started 20, 30 years ago on the automation of the FX market is at the time, and I didn't forget to mention that, but there was a natural resistance to change, right? People will say, well, I trade on EBS, I have my clients on the phone, everything is fine, they don't need it. What are you talking about? They don't need a single platform, they don't need a multi-dealer platform. But they knew they needed to have somebody just in case. So they hire people like me to say, well, you sit there, I hope you are not successful, but if something happens, at least I can bring you in and we switch on the single dealer platform. And it happened and we did bring on this. And I think for Quantum, it's the same thing, right? Every bank needs to have somebody looking at it. It cannot go live now because it's too expensive. But the day somebody is going to crack some code to be able to hack some big banks because of that, they will put the plug and the effort, and they will have at least the nucleus of skill set within the organization to be able to accelerate the deployment. So yeah, too big to avoid, but too expensive to deploy.
That's a great sentence. I suppose finally, it would be interesting from my perspective to know what you see beyond those things we've talked about. What's the next big thing in financial markets? Is it technology? Is it regulation? Is it something else that might be that we haven't thought of that you have, given your expertise?
I cannot predict the future, unfortunately, but what I realized in the last few years is everything is linked. And this I didn't know that 10 years ago is it's not only a technology play. It's not only a regulation play. It's not only global ecosystem play, right? So what we see happening in the macroeconomic world with a change of administration in the US, election in Europe, war in Ukraine and in Gaza, this part is very linked to the regulatory part, is very linked to the technology part. And you cannot ignore any one of them to be able to prepare for the future, right? Like last year, we are talking about global economy. How can we set up global standards? Well, this year, we realize it's going to be a lot harder to achieve any global standard because the priority is going to say, make a strong Europe, make a strong UK, make a strong US. So it's going to be a regional priority. Because of that, the regulators are going to have very big push for the government, the politician. You know, in the UK, it's a growth agenda. How do we push the growth agenda? So it comes from the government, goes to the regulator. The regulators are going to impose some change, and those changes are going to be deployed because of new technology, right? So instant payment, T+1 for our market is going to be the next big thing as well. Going from T+1 to T0 will be the thing after that. Application of AI, the regulation now is still very weak on application of AI in financial instruments. Should we change it? Can existing regulation apply to AI? Sometimes not, because we don't have the people on the assets, or for digital assets, it's the same thing. Existing regulation is not fit for purpose on digital assets. So you cannot ignore those three. Those three are linked. And for me, that's the future. And it's hard because people are normally specialized, right? And that was a good and the bad of when I worked for a global bank is you are very specialized in one thing. There, I think to be effective, you have to be able to understand those three domains. You have to say, this is what's going on in the world. Because of that, this regulation will need to happen. I need to influence to make sure the regulation help the market the way I want the market to move. And because of that, this is a technology who is going to be implied. And for that, maybe in conclusion, that's why I made the move from a bank to a tech company working on a regulatory topic in the fixed income consolidated tape, because it's those three things working together, right? It's a European project, it's a UK project, it's based on regulation, but it's an innovation by itself because it's going to help to cut the cost of data and is going to help to make the transparency of pricing in the bond market available for people. You know, right now everybody panic because the stock market is going down, I should switch to bonds, but nobody knows where to find the price for a bond, right? At least with a consolidated tape, they will know how to find the price for that bond. They can buy it and you have the growth agenda of the government, right? So all those things are linked.
It's interesting, actually. We do some work with climate fintech and climate finance companies, and that exemplifies their experience because it is this circular debate between regulation, standardization, having rules that are fair to all. You have a scenario where the project's in Africa, it's funded in the Middle East. The investors that they want to invest in the tokenized assets and traditional assets are in the UK and the US. So you have this constant circling of wagons around these three things, and they can't be dealt with discreetly. And I think you've summed it up elegantly for traditional finance markets. And that's probably the biggest evolution of all, because to your point, 30 years ago, everybody had their job and they worked in their box and nobody's fake anybody else outside of their box, and banks didn't talk to other banks because they were the enemy and so on. So I guess we have achieved a huge amount one way or another in terms of breaking down some of those silos where people recognize that we're all in it together. We're all here.
Definitely.
Well, it's been an absolute joy, as it always is, talking to you, Stefan, and we hope we'll have this conversation again, and I'm certainly looking forward to seeing you sometime in the near future. But thank you very, very much for coming on.
Thank you for the invitation. That was really good to speak to you, Tina.
A bientôt.
Bye-bye. A bientôt.